Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 81 of Metallicast, the Metallica podcast. I'm your host and fellow Metallica fan. My name is Brandon. On this episode, I'm joined by one of my favorite guests, music journalist extraordinaire Mr. Richard S. He. The two of us give our top five favorite Metallica acoustic performances. We also talk a lot more about some of the recent Blacklist covers that have been released, and, well, just a whole bunch of other nonsense mixed in. This was a lot of fun to do, as it always is with Richard. So let's jump right into it. Here is our conversation where we give our top five favorite Metallica acoustic performances. My guest today needs no introduction if you are a longtime listener to this here podcast. He is a music journalist, musician, producer, and just the biggest fucking, I'm dropping an F-bomb right off the bat, Saint Anger fan in the world. Now, you might be wondering right now, why am I introducing him if he needs no introduction? Because I need to welcome him to the Metallica podcast, brought to you by Metallica and Amazon. Richard S. He, welcome to the Metallica podcast. How are you, sir?
Oh, what?
I sold my soul to Amazon and Metallica, and I've rebranded. I am now the Metallica podcast. I already had it as my tagline. Now I am the official Metallica podcast.
Hello. Who else will be joining us today?
Oh, no big deal. Just James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, Kirk Hammond, and Robert Trujillo. Oh, and who's that? Jason Newsted, because we're going to be talking all about the Black Album today. Oh, what, is that Bob Rock in the corner over there? Bob Rock will be joining us as well.
congrats on getting those stream numbers up.
I'm not going to lie. When I was pleasantly surprised by the news announcement. Very excited. I'm eagerly anticipating what they put out there, because I think everything they do is of the highest quality. I think as a nerd, it's going to be must listen. But it's funny, like the reactions that I saw, like all the various Metallica podcasts getting so the listeners out of the various podcasts are very passionate, but it's like, oh, you're no match for Metal Up Your Podcast. Hey, why didn't you call it Metallicast? That's the gist of what I got from reading people's comments, is that everybody is saying you have to live up to Metal Up Your Podcast, and nobody knows Metallicast exists because everybody was telling them to name it Metallicast.
Oh yeah, it proves that you picked the correct name, I think. Like, possibly you may have taken the name that Metallica might have wanted.
I hope so, and I'm waiting for their lawyers to reach out any minute and offer me a paycheck. I will sell it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, take the buyout. Yeah, fuck it all and no regrets.
My favorite comment was the person who wrote, "You should call it Metallicast and Podcast for All." And I was like, those two podcasts already exist.
Metallicast Up Your Ass and Podcast for All to Speak and Destroy.
It was very funny, very amusing. I do appreciate the listeners out there who did write back to people saying, it's a podcast already. Thank you. But I found it all very amusing. And it was a great way to get social media numbers up, to get my stream numbers up. And let's just say Metallicast was on a lot of charts last week. Pat on my back for doing absolutely nothing. Oh, yeah.
No question. We better deliver tonight, hey.
Oh, we better deliver, because they were, if anybody stayed with me for the last episode, they were massively disappointed by Mike. So, Richard, no pressure.
It was
pressure.
Fun, but grand total of like 3 minutes on Metallica and about two on Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that was the gist of it. And, you know, and he took some swings at Australians, which I did not appreciate. And I try to defend you and all of Australia, and I'm sorry if I failed you.
I think his accent started out awful and got better.
It did. But there was a little bit of a Beatles in it, in my opinion. Like he went a little too Liverpool at times.
That's just wishful thinking, I guess.
Well, today, Richard Esse, the one, the only, is joining Metallicast. Not the Metallica podcast, but the Metallica podcast. He is joining us yet again for another exciting episode that I'm sure will be of the utmost excellence, not because of me, because of him. And I'm sure...
Because of you.
Oh, please. And I'm sure, you know, I always plan on each episode is going to be like, all right, we'll do an hour. Yeah, I already know with Richard, it's going to be, if we can keep it 90 minutes, that will be a miracle. Because we go off on our tangents. We talk and talk and talk, especially when there's a list involved. And ladies and gentlemen, there is a list involved in this here podcast. So, I mean, should we jump right into it? Do we have any Metallica news to get out of the way, or any comments or thoughts that are filtering, bubbling to the surface in our heads after all this time away?
We have Blacklist covers that you haven't talked about, and some of which I haven't listened to, even though I have to professionally for... I am ranking all of them for a publication that will not be named yet.
Yes, and I'm super excited for that. And in my absence, I'm hoping to have you record a Blacklist episode as sort of a companion or follow-up to your article.
It is in the works.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So should we talk a little bit about the Blacklist covers that have seen the light of day so far? There's, I mean, the majority of them are unreleased, but we've gotten a handful out there. We don't need to do them track by track by track, but are there any that stand out to you for good or bad reasons?
Obviously the first bunch were like awesome. Just the Miley cover, Nothing Else Matters, St. Vincent Sad But True. Some that jumped out to me later on were Biffy Clyro doing Holier Than Thou.
Yeah.
Kind of more melodic version, weirdly enough.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the J Balvin Wherever I May Roam, which I know you weren't a fan of.
So
that was more of a reggaeton like remix than a cover, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not too fond of that. Not because I'm not that I'm a, I mean, I'm not a big fan of that genre, but I'm really interested in hearing these covers in different styles. I'd rather listen to like a straight up reggaeton version of a Metallica song than somebody doing note for note cover, just because that to me is more interesting. But what I did not like about that particular cover was that I feel like it relied too much on the original recording, where and it had like that weird bridge where it was literally just like the CD playing.
that did not work for me, that part.
I do think, you know, the way the beat connected with the riff, I thought that part was creative. I just did not think it really went any... It did nothing for me beyond that. It was just sort of there. Then when that bridge came on, I was like, I mean, I can just put on the Black Album myself.
Did you enjoy the I think it was the Hindi one by, I'm reading, Vishal Dadlani Divine Shore Police, The Unforgiven?
That one was cool. Yeah. I like something like that. That is, it takes what Metallica did and it honors it. But it brings it in a new direction and does something new with it. And the artists brought their own flavor to it. So, and like I said, even if it's not something I personally would listen to normally, I'd rather listen to that than a note for note recreation. even like if we look at some of the more straightforward covers, like I like the two that come to mind right now are Enter Sandman by Weezer and Don't Tread on Me by Volbeat. And I disliked the Weezer cover. I say that as somebody who likes Weezer. I like a good chunk of Weezer. I think they're a very hit or miss band, especially in recent years. But their cover did absolutely nothing for me because it was a note for note recreation. The only creative part to it was they did a cool like guitar harmony, guitar melody like leading in. I think if I'm not mistaken, it's leading into like the bridge of the song, and that to me, I was like, oh, that's like a Weezer guitar lick. I want more of that. I want it to sound like Weezer. And to me, it sounded like Weezer doing Metallica by Numbers.
Yeah, I think they have like a cloned version of themselves where that like just plays covers note for note. They did, I think it was called the Teal Album a couple years ago, which was all covers. And that was like not awful, but nowhere near good enough to warrant its own existence.
Yeah. And whereas I felt like the Don't Tread on Me cover by Volbeat, it's a pretty straightforward cover, pretty identical in a lot of ways, but they do a lot of subtle changes and they give that little gallop to make it feel like it's a Volbeat song. And they're able to kind of take a note for note cover in their own style, and it sounds like Volbeat. Whereas to me, like if I just had heard that Enter Sandman cover, not knowing it was Weezer, I'm not even sure I would have guessed it was Weezer. I would have been like, this like a, I'm like, oh, that's a very impressive bar band.
But I think so far the hit rate has been really good. Like,
yeah,
it's funny because you listen to those like all metal cover albums and tribute albums and stuff.
Yeah.
And generally, they always feel like note for note covers, like where the only difference is the guitar tone or the recording quality or getting growls instead of, you know, clean vocals.
But yeah.
Here, I appreciate the variety a lot more, which is, funny because the whole Blacklist project, it's like, you know, here is Metallica's influence on all these generations of musicians in different styles, including metal, but not just limited to metal.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, that reflects the album perfectly, I think.
Yeah, so. I was actually thinking of that today because they just, at the time we're recording this, they just released the Phoebe Bridgers version of Nothing Else Matters earlier today. So if you have, I'm sure it's out there on YouTube. I'm not sure. I have it through Apple Music. It's got to be out there on Spotify. So if you have a streaming service, you should be able to find it along with all the other versions that we've mentioned and not mentioned that have been released so far. But it got me thinking about how, you know, that I played that version and then immediately after the Miley Cyrus version came on, and I'm thinking about who's on that track, like Elton John, Yo-Yo Ma, Chad Smith. Yeah. And it's just like it really puts into focus, one, how huge that album is.
Yeah.
And two, how much Metallica has transcended heavy metal. Because you know, I mentioned Volbeat before. They're an obvious choice for a Metallica cover album. Corey Taylor is on. He's an obvious choice. You know, anybody in the metal rock realm is an obvious choice. But when you bring in hip-hop artists, Latino artists, Indian artists, when you bring in country artists, all these different styles of music, it really puts into perspective the importance of both Metallica as a unit, as a brand, and the importance of the Black Album, period. You know, absolutely, just in terms of its influence and pop culture relevance.
I think, yeah, I love that Metallica can still throw like curveballs at us like this. Even though they technically are not doing anything on this release, like they don't need to, you know?
Yeah. And that's not the point, right? For them to really contribute to it. Because you can have the Black Album for all that, you know? So it's in the deluxe version, I mean, we're getting live versions, we're getting demo versions, you're getting all the typical stuff that we've gotten from the other remasters, and all that stuff's going to be great to dive into. And, you know, to hear an instrumental version of a song in the early stages of the songwriting, or to hear, I always love it when you get the demos and have it's like, you know?
When the vocal melody is like one note off, well, like in Master Puppets, the demo, it's like end of passion play, crumbling away. What? Total mindfuck.
But it I think it really shows too the strength of the songwriting. Like a good song can be translated into different styles of music. And I mean, when you look at Nothing Else Matters alone, the Blacklist has like, you know,
12, I think
12 versions of that. And there's so many versions that have come before the Blacklist, from classical artists, from folk artists, from, you know, country artists, from so many different walks of life, that it's truly astonishing. And there's just no other, metal band you could do this with. You know, you could, I'm not saying like you could never do a country version of a Megadeth song. I'm not saying, you know, Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, they've been sampled and used in hip hop music. And I'm not saying there other artists are, it's impossible to do it with, but you're never going to get a project of this size with an album of this importance to so many people and have so many A-listers attached. Like, I don't think you're going to get a, and this is not a Megadeth knock, but you're not going to get a Toot Le Monde cover with, you know, Elton John on piano and Yo-Yo Ma on cello. It's just not going to happen.
We can dream.
I mean, I trust me, if they want to come out with it, I will gladly listen to it. But I think Yo-Yo Ma and Elton John should do a full metal tour, and they just cover Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax, the big four. Maybe sprinkle in some Testament and Exodus. And
I just thought of something really funny. Like, imagine if, you know, I'm sitting there at midnight on the Friday that the entire Blacklist comes out, and I'm the first person to put together a Spotify playlist of every song, but then I put in Mechanics by Megadeth in the playlist.
Just like every 10 songs, slip it in.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. Oh, this
never heard this cover before.
Yeah. This is a great version of the Four Horsemen. Did they change the lyrics?
A lot worse. The lyrics?
Wait, is this about a horny gas station attendant? I'm a horny gas.
Hey, Brandon, what's the newest Megadeth album called?
Welcome to the new Megadeth album. The Sick, the Dying, and the Dead. Oh, yeah.
Woo.
There, I did hear there was a very small sample of a new Megadeth riff from the album that I'm not sure if it was released like through one of those Dave Mustaine cameo videos, which
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, he's just been dropping like little nuggets. Like, I've never seen to his credit, I don't think I've ever seen somebody make so many blabbermouth headlines just from cameo videos people paid for.
It's very funny. He's paying like their wages too.
Yeah. But there was like a small sample of a riff, obviously not enough to judge on, especially when we're talking about a whole full length album. But I gotta say that the part of the riff I heard sounded great, sounded fast, sounded heavy, sounded like it had a lot of energy behind it. So I'm staying optimistic. I think Megadeth is destined for a great album in the 2000s. I know other people will say they've already had great albums in the 2000s. Not in my opinion.
I've been through this before. Since the system has failed, the albums have just been a little bit Megadeth by numbers, a little bit generic, a little just... I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying they're, you know, there's no great songs or good songs. I'm just saying as albums, they just have not been living up to what came before. And I think a lot of that has to do with the with doing quantity over quality, where there was a period where I feel like every like 2 years you're getting a new Megadeth album and then a tour and then a Megadeth album, then a tour, then a best of album, a live album, and then another new studio album, and then a tour. And it's just like, all right, take a break. Like take a few years, Dave, and just write like a killer album. And it's been a few years since Dystopia. And I really like the new guitarist. I think he was the highlight of Dystopia. I was not thrilled about that album, but I thought the solos and the tone was like more reminiscent of Marty Friedman, who I think many people would agree is the best guitarist to ever in Megadeth. So I'm staying optimistic, and I really am rooting for a really awesome new Megadeth album, because I think Dave deserves to have that moment, and I think Megadeth fans deserve to have that moment.
Absolutely, especially after, you know, the year we've all had, and also the year that he's had, especially.
Yeah, I mean, between, you know, the cancer stuff, and then the David Ellefson stuff, and you know, the all of the COVID stuff, it's just like, come out and have a fucking banging album that rips.
Also, I want to give a quick shout out to Electro Mustaine, who keeps putting out like weird little electro pop glam songs.
And she was a country artist once upon a time, I remember.
I think so, yeah. Her new thing's like, it's a bit like 2008-09 Lady Gaga, I guess.
Yeah.
She has her own feel to it. It's like, yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Well, there you go. From the mouth of Richard, who can definitely speak more intelligently about that than moi. But the real reason we're here today... I already mentioned we're doing a list. And see, this is why these episodes end up being 90 plus minutes. And that's not a complaint, because I think these albums are always of high quality. And God knows, after that Mike episode, I need a high quality episode. Anyways, no, in all seriousness, we're here for to name our personal top five favorite acoustic performances from Metallica, who, you know, until recent years was obviously never really known for their acoustic performances. And now with the All Within My Hand Foundation, the performances seem to be becoming, and just in general, the charitable work they've been doing, it seems to be, you know, they almost always play acoustic when it comes to charity, and those have been more and more frequent in the last decade. And so we've gotten more and more great acoustic performance for them. I got to be honest with you, Richard. I was doing research for this episode, and I messaged you on Twitter. I was like, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. I had a top five in my head going into it, and I think for the most part, I stuck with that top five, because you mentioned in your message to me you had to go with your gut. I also just felt like I had to go with my gut and kind of go with my first instincts. But there were a lot of different avenues I went down, a lot of different rabbit holes I went down. And at one point I had like a few different lists going, and I had to kind of go back to my original train of thought, because there were versions I had completely forgotten about. And there were one or two. I'm like, wait, they did this song acoustically? I had like no memory of it, or a very vague memory of it. So I'm really interested to hear your top five. Was there any specific thinking that went behind this choosing your top five, or was it just five performances that stood out to you?
I kind of just dived in because as you said, there are just so many from over the years, but I feel like if I actually sat down and listened to every single one I could find, I probably would still end up with a top five like this. So, yeah. Yeah.
And you went with like a specific performance of a song, or you went generally like this acoustic version?
More so specific performances. Right. Yeah.
I did the same. Yeah. Because at least with two of the songs I chose, there are specific reasons why I chose the versions I did. So I'm really interested to hear what you have. So let's jump right into it. You can start. Give me one of your top five.
All right, number five is "Creeping Death" at the KSJO Radio Studios in 1997. Now, have you heard this one, Brandon?
Yeah, so it's funny because my number five is not "Creeping Death," but it's from this session, and this is something that I had completely forgotten about. But when I was doing research for this episode, it brought me back. Once upon a time, when I was in middle school, I had a bootleg CD, and the bootleg CD had, if not all these performances, then most of these performances. So I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube and checking out this performance, and I looked up the information on Metallica.com, and like there's stuff on here that was surprising that they, I think there are a couple surprising choices for songs, and then it's just a who's who for guests. It's an amazing guest list that they have performing.
I'm not even sure if I saw that. Oh no, I found it. Okay.
Yeah. Right, so right, it's from KSJO in San Jose, California, December 18th, 1997. Don't call us, we'll call you. That's the name of, the name of the show on KSJO. Yeah. And Metallica came on and did a full 8-song acoustic set featuring a variety of guests. And some of these are songs that they have performed again in more recent years. But several of them are ones that have sort of been, at least the acoustic versions have been lost to time. So it's a really fascinating set list. And I think, this must have been very soon after they did the Bridge School benefit with Neil Young. And that the first time they did that was in 1997. And I believe that was the first time that they really ever performed acoustically on stage. So this is the KSGO show is probably in the, I'm going to guess the second time they've ever publicly performed acoustically.
Yeah. They were doing Four Horsemen acoustic at their actual shows, weren't they?
They were doing acoustic. So I'm trying to, my timeline's a little bit confused. It all happened after the release of Reload, because you had the Bridge School benefit with Neil Young. You had an acoustic set built into the Reload tour.
That's what I meant.
And you can also see that on the Reload Rehearse Request concert. If you track that down from MTV back in the day, they did like a really awesome, I believe it was like in a warehouse, and they started with like an acoustic show. It was basically the Reload rehearsal, but surrounded by fans. And then it was like, it was called Reload Rehearse Request, because then they took fan requests. And because I remember somebody like, I remember watching and being like, did they actually request this song? Like, people were requesting like Enter Sandman. Like, you're requesting Enter Sandman, request Dyer's Eve. But the one thing that stands out to me besides the acoustic set that I remember is they did, somebody requested Creeping Death and they played it. And I'm not sure if this is true or not. I'm assuming it is probably true. James Hetfield said he did not remember the words. So they brought a fan on, and he just, the fan I think who requested the song, and he just like screamed all the words to Creeping Death.
Of course. I think the MTV show you're talking about is the one that's been like mislabeled variously as unplugged.
Yes, if you go on YouTube,
not a real MTV.
No, if you go on YouTube and you see Metallica MTV Unplugged, that's this show. They've never actually done an MTV Unplugged concert.
Yeah.
So that's just a mislabeling. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But it's a fascinating the KSJO show is fascinating. So you have Low Man's Lyric, Helpless, The Four Horsemen, Poor Twisted Me, which was one I was like, oh yeah, like I remember hearing that cover or the acoustic version of it like on my bootleg back in the day. Completely forgot they ever did that song live, never mind as an acoustic jam. They did Nothing Else Matters, Creeping Death, Tuesday's Gone, and Last Caress, but a bunch of those with guests. So like Jerry Cantrell and John Popper on The Four Horsemen. Chris Isaac does harmony vocals on Nothing Else Matters, which I thought was great because I remember reading an interview where James Hetfield cited Chris Isaac as his vocal influence when he was recording Nothing Else Matters.
Absolutely.
I think for him personally, it was probably a cool full circle moment. And then you have Tuesday's Gone, which, so here's what I'm confused on. This is the same, it's all the same guests that are on Garage Inc.
Yep.
I am not sure if Garage Inc. is just this version or if they re-recorded it with those guests for Garage Inc. That I'm not sure of.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess it's a re-recording, but it might be this exact version. You have Gary Rossington on guitar from Lynyrd Skynyrd, Pepper Keenan from Corrosion of Conformity on guitar and vocals, Jerry Cantrell, Les Claypool, John Popper, Jim Martin, Sean Kenny. It's a who's who. But why did you go with Creeping Death as your choice?
So I haven't heard this entire show, so clearly I need to, but I just was blown over by the sheer like ridiculousness of it. So firstly, you have the host just mugging over the intro and like yelling random things throughout the performance.
Oh, the DJ is very annoying throughout this.
Yeah. But it's played like super fast, so like live show tempo but acoustic, and it feels like it could just fall apart at any time.
Yeah.
And at a couple of points it almost does. I think some of the transitions are a bit funny, but I know, just very, very charming. Especially how Kirk like bluesifies his lead parts throughout. Like the guitar solo is almost all improvised. So
yeah,
it's a real fun one. Like I feel like even if they wanted to, like they wouldn't be able to recreate that feel again. It kind of came out organically to me.
Yeah, I mean that was a big thing that stood out to me about this whole performance from KSJO was just how loose it was.
Yeah, and like, they're never loose, really. Sometimes, but I don't think of them as a loose band.
No, I feel like when they're loose, if they're ever loose, it's not intentional, and it's because like they're struggling to keep up, like on a new song that they learned, a half hour before they went on stage or something like that. And it's like the first ever. That's when they're loose, and that's when like things can go off the rails. But I've never really heard them just like loose and laid back in this way. And I include that in the other acoustic performances that came after. And for my number five, I chose The Four Horsemen from this recording. And you know, I remember hearing The Four Horsemen from the All Within My Hands, 2020 concert, from the Helping Hands album. And you know, it's a great version. It's performance wise a better version than this, because it's in a lot of ways, because it's a tighter, it's a cleaner, more polished performance. But I remember them making headlines when they like released the video, because it was, oh, Metallica goes country. They do like a country western version of The Four Horsemen. I was like, they did that all the way back in 1997. This was like just a rehash of that. And this version is cool because not only do you have Jerry Cantrell on guitar, but you have John Popper of Blues Traveler just like doing improvised harmonicas all over the damn song. It's just like a really loose, rowdy, bluesy country-ish rendition of a thrash song, and it's a really fun listen, I think. So my choices for choosing were very similar to your choices for choosing Creeping Death.
Hell yeah. I think I need to go back and listen to the whole show for sure.
It really sounds like they've
all had like several beers.
Yeah, it really does. Like they definitely like smoked a joint and had a few beers or something to get themselves loosened up. If you're interested in hearing and you've not yet heard it, I found it on YouTube under if you search Metallica acoustic metal, there's like an acoustic metal bootleg that comes up, and the version I found even broke it down like track by track so you could skip from song to song. And this is how loose they are, right? When they do Nothing Else Matters, the whole like first part of the song anyways is just them laughing. Like they're playing the song and like I feel like they're just like calling out to the DJ, and then James is just like laughing his way through the verses. Like they are not like taking it seriously at all, which is fun to hear in a,
yeah,
especially over a song that you've heard like a million times. Cause I was like, oh, this is going to be like so good. I want to hear like those Chris Isaak harmony vocals. And then like Hetfield is just laughing his ass off through the whole like first verse.
You don't want it every performance, but once in a while, you know, you just got to let loose. Yeah.
that was like my mic, my mic episode last week. That was my KSJO podcast episode.
Oh dear.
Just gotta let loose once in a while, and now we're focused and doing a very strict, serious podcast episode.
Absolutely. Yes. Enunciating very clearly.
Yes, I always enunciate clearly because I'm a podcast professional, and I'm just going to emphasize all my words, especially my P's.
Anyway, my number four is All Within My Hands from S&M 2, which seems like a predictable choice, but I actually almost didn't include it. But no, I went back and listened to it, and I thought, it's just too good not to, you know?
Yeah.
Partly because I admittedly have not rewatched S&M 2 since I saw it in the cinema, but it does feel like the whole moment does feel extra special just after the last 18 months. But ultimately, it's funny because I'm one of the people who does still kind of prefer the original All Within My Hands. I really would love to hear Metallica do any St. Anger song like in the original tuning rather than the tuning up they do in this version. But it's like a testament to this version and this moment that it is as great as it is, I think.
I'm going to mix up my order a little bit on the fly here because I also chose this song. I chose it at a different number, but I might as well talk about it now because the numbers really are just there for structure. So I chose, same as you, I was hesitant to choose this version because it's an acoustic version, but you have this like lush, rich orchestra around them. And it's like, it's far from a stripped down acoustic version at this point when you have 100+ musicians playing on it, but it is just so good. And I think when you look at the long list of Metallica songs that they have reworked or reimagined for their acoustic sets, this is, as soon as they performed this for the first time, which I think was when they went back to Bridge School, maybe in 2007, it became like an instant fan favorite. And, you know, it's one thing to rework a classic like the Four Horsemen. It's one thing to rework Enter Sandman. They did a brilliant job reworking Disposable Heroes. But to take a song that is a deep cut from your most criticized album that is just this heavy, brutal, ugly beast of a song and then you rework it into a whole new song that is equal parts eerie and beautiful.
Mm.
That to me is just genius. And then you, I think if you look at the last 10 years, this has become, for most fans, the definitive version of this song.
Mm.
And I think the SNM2 version, it just does it the best, because this is one of those songs where the orchestra arrangement is just beautifully composed around what Metallica is playing. And for me, it's hard now to go back and listen to it without the orchestra, just because I'm hearing the orchestra parts in my head now, and like singing along the orchestra parts over the Metallica parts. That's how well done it is. And I remember when SNM2 came out, this was released as the single. And I remember I rarely, rarely ever listen to FM radio these days. But at one point, probably a month or two after the album came out, I was in my car, happened to have it on a random local rock station, and they were playing that song. And I was like, they took a brutally heavy, fast, ugly deep cut from what many label their worst album, it made it a radio hit with a full orchestra.
It's a beautiful thing. For Saint Anger to get any representation on SNM2 made me very happy. You know, we joked about hearing Frantic with the orchestra.
Yeah.
And that did not happen, but this happened.
Yeah.
And so who can possibly complain?
Yeah. I say this as somebody too who loves the Saint Anger version of this song. Mm. I think the Saint Anger version of this track is one of the more underrated tracks in their catalog. If I had to make a top 10 most underrated Metallica song list, which I should do for a future episode, I think I would have to include All Within My Hands from Saint Anger on that list somewhere, because I really think it's such an amazing track in so many ways.
Yeah, I should mention that this, like, their unplugged version of All With My Hands really brings out the blues in the song, which I think is all throughout the Saint Anger album. It's just mutated and somewhat unrecognizable, but to me it's still like the core of the album, as I've written about at length.
Check out the link in the episode description. I feel like I have not sent an article out to so many people.
Love it.
As I have your Saint Anger article. And that includes articles I myself have written. I'm trying to spread the Richard S. He gospel about Saint Anger.
Thank you. It served its purpose, because like every time I see an argument about Saint Anger come up on social media, instead of like typing out all my points, I can just go, here, I said it 3 years ago. And in fact, I've been tossing up whether to do a similar one about Lulu for its 10th anniversary. And after our long podcast, which feels like, you know, phase one of my reappreciation for that album. I don't know how much time I'll have to do all the research.
You can always do it for the 11th year anniversary. I'll let you.
Mm. We'll see.
Your number three, unless you have something else to add about All Within My Hands, Richard.
No. I feel like we said it all. All right. Number three is, in fact, The Four Horsemen from All Within My Hands 2018, also known as Helping Hands Live and Acoustic at the Masonic.
I think I said 2020 before, right? It was 2018. As I was saying 2020, I was like, it was earlier than that. I was thinking in my head.
The show may have been released later, but it happened in 2018, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, because, I mean, when did the second one happen? Was that still 2020?
Or
we were already in 2021. It's all blending in. Damn COVID's just making everything blend in with each other. COVID and kids in my life. Every year now just blurs and blends.
One negative and one positive.
Yes. Yeah. COVID was a huge positive. Kids are a huge negative. I'm kidding.
You tested COVID negative and your wife's pregnancy tests were positive.
Yes.
I was trying to think of a respectable way to say that. Congrats.
Thank you.
A number two. Two plus two is four, the four horsemen. So I was considering... Yeah, including a version from the Reload tour, because that was also the first time I heard Metallica acoustic. Way back in the day, just via bootlegs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was looking through a few versions of those, but actually the 2018 one stood out a bit more to me, just because it's a bit more epic. It's a bit more like indulgent. I would say the tempo is a bit slower, so it feels a bit richer, but also because like they have more members. I mean, they have a second guitarist and a percussionist. They've got a pedal steel player, and they've got someone who has my dream job, which is playing keyboards in Metallica.
they really did not add
too much, but
yeah, they really did do a brilliant job though of just like making some of those arrangements lush and I feel like for Hetfield that it had been a while since he could tip his cowboy hat and give a nod to his country influences. Like we talked about on episode 79, a little bit country. Check it out now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, everywhere you find your podcast. Cheap plug is over. Continue, Richard.
I mean, every solo episode is a highlight. But yeah, James's baritone sounds a little bit richer than it did in the past. I mean, as he gets older. But I also love that they play the chorus in halftime.
Yeah.
For me, that adds a lot, because I don't think they did that originally. But it's just that attention to detail to me that wins me over, I think.
Yeah, it definitely... The version of the Four Horsemen I chose was not because it was the more polished version, as I said.
Definitely not.
Like, you know, The version All Within My Hands, I would say, for so many reasons, is the superior performance and the superior arrangement. But I'm telling you, that KSJO show, there's just something really fun about it. and it brought me back to my childhood, too, when I first heard them. But I think that's an awesome choice for your number three. For my number three, I chose something from their second Bridge School performance in 2007. Now, this performance, if I'm not mistaken, they did two nights. Night one, I remember going online and seeing what they performed, and I was like, oh my God. They started off with four covers. I Just Want to Celebrate. Please Don't Judas Me. I'm Only Happy When It Rains. It's a great one. And the one that I chose for number three, Brothers in Arms. So I feel like it was at this time where I think it took, until the 2000s for Metallica to start kind of laying their guard down live and having more fun on stage. And I think this performance is a perfect example of that. Like a funk cover, garbage cover, Nazareth cover, and a Dire Straits cover to start your set. That's just them messing around and having fun and also doing something a little bit special for the people that are there and giving them something new. And I thought that was just a really cool, fun set list. And the Brothers in Arms performance really stood out to me because it's such a serious, deep, emotional track. And I feel like of the four covers they do, it has the most emotional weight to it. Whereas, like, I just want to celebrate. It's just a fun show starter, sing along. Please Don't Judas Me, great, brilliant cover of it. They've done that multiple times since. And there's a reason why they've repeated that one, because it's so well done. Only Happy When It Rains. It's just so quirky to hear them cover Garbage, and it's so fun to hear it, and it's really well done. But for me, Brothers in Arms just had a little bit more emotional weight behind it, and I really enjoyed the cover from Night One. And I know Night Two, I think they did it again.
Yeah, they did.
I know that one or two, I think a couple, at least, I think only Happy When It Rains was subbed out with a Deep Purple song, if I'm not mistaken.
It's Veteran of the Psychic was.
Yeah, and then the other three remains the same, I think. So, yeah. But, yeah, I have always really enjoyed that acoustic version. Not a big fan of the Dire Straits version, though, I got to say. I was not that, obviously I'm familiar with Dire Straits, but I was not familiar with that song. And I sought it out and listened to it. And the Dire Straits version did not, stay with me. But the Metallica version has stayed with me all these years later.
I actually haven't heard the Metallica cover, so I will have to check it out. But it's funny because, yeah, I have a lot of friends who are, absolute Dire Straits haters.
Yeah.
So... I was expecting you to defend the original more, but
I do not hate. They are a band that I think are immensely talented. And I think despite the grand hits that they've had over their career, I think they're probably a bit underrated by myself included. I probably underrate them a lot. But they're just not a band that's they're a band I've tried to get into, they're just one of those bands that have not really clicked with me yet. Anyways, maybe I'll try again. And one of these days it'll click, but
I think I mentally have filed them under the same category as late Eric Clapton. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. But
generation.
But less racist, which is good too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Generationally, maybe just not for me.
Yeah.
But perhaps I will find a way. I don't know.
Yeah. So that is my number three. Richard, your number. Wait, was that our number three? Is that what?
Yeah, it was.
All right. I'm confusing myself now. All right. Take it away.
Number two is Disposable Heroes, also from Old In My Hands, Helping Hands 2018. This is just like a dream version for me. It's one of the last songs I would have expected them to do acoustically. Even in its metal form, it's a little bit underperformed and I think a bit underappreciated, even though everyone's heard it. But it's just so impressive. The arrangement's completely different. It's in a different time signature too, which I guess changes the feel by default. I think 12/8, I guess, instead of 4/4. But it means even the vocals are shuffled around, all the different parts are shuffled around.
Yeah.
And it's just so big and grand and familiar, but new. Maybe even more so than Nord in My Hands, because that's more of a vocal led song.
Yeah.
Whereas this is more of an arrangement led one. But you have, someone backing up playing a mandolin, which is one of my favorite instruments. Kirk absolutely shredding a 12-string acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a key change when they hit the bridge, I think 3 minutes in or something.
Yeah.
Just total curveball of that. And to me, I just love how adult it sounds compared to the original, which is just pure energy. But right. This one brings a certain gravitas while still feeling, maybe if not a thrash metal song, it has, it has that kind of propulsiveness to it.
Sure. Yeah. So this one's not on my list, but this, if I had to, this was one that I kind of was like going back and forth on. I was really tempted to put it in my top five because I think it's a brilliant reimagining of it. It's not even like a rearrangement so much as it's a reimagining. And I think the first time they performed this, I think Hetfield even said something along the lines of like, see if you can recognize this one. And like, I remember when they started playing, it's like, bum, ba-da-dum, ba-da-da-da. I'm like, what is this? Cause I did not look at like the song title. And then when he starts singing, I'm like, holy shit, it's Disposable Heroes. So good. And it really is, they kind of take you on a little bit of a journey, and I really like the rearrangement of the, you know, like you mentioned, the chorus, the bridge, it's just really, really well done.
I've not heard the original because they first debuted this version, I think, at Bridge School in 2007 as well.
Yeah, that's the first time I heard it. Yeah,
I'm curious to hear how it's changed in the years since.
Yeah, I would have to listen to them back to back to tell. But off the top of my head, I don't think it's actually changed too much. I think it's probably just got tightened up, and then they added in like the mandolin and other. Is there anything I forget off the top of my head? Is there anything else on there besides the mandolin?
I think so.
Yeah. So I will tie in with the Helping Hands concert for my next song, which is Bleeding Me. I think it's funny. Somebody just wrote on Twitter today. I think it was good old Punt.
Hey.
Ooh, I'm going to do my Mustaine impression for you. Punt is, if you're not on Twitter, he's a great guy. We do a lot of music talking on there at Metallica's Pod. Follow me on there, and I'm sure you'll find him weaving in and out of conversations with me and many other music fans. And I'm just gonna keep on saying I because I'm a podcast professional. I am encouraging him to start up his own Megadeth podcast.
Absolutely. We need one.
I know. How is there not one? He can call it, and Punts, if you're listening, this title's for free. You can call it, I'm not sure exactly how you write that out, but that's what it should be called.
Yep.
But he posted today, he was listening to Bleeding Me, and he's like, you know, some people might not like this because it's on, and I wrote, it is an all-time classic song,
yep,
in my opinion. I think this is it has always been one of my favorite Metallica songs. As somebody who grew up with Load, that came out when I was in sixth grade. It's the first compact disc I ever owned and it's the first one I ever played on my first CD player. So I mean, I have nostalgic memories for this album. So maybe I view it in a different light than earlier generations because of that reason. But I have always held the Load era in high regard. And I think Load is the stronger album of the two, in my opinion. And I think it just has a few just brilliant all-time songs on it, mixed in with a bunch of good songs and okay by Metallica standard songs. But Bleeding Me is one of the few that I would easily rank as an all-time great song. In fact, dare I say, if I made a top 10 favorite Metallica songs, I think Bleeding Me would have to make that top 10.
I respect it.
And it's a song that they performed a lot in like the post Load years up until the early 2000s, and then they just stopped performing it. So when it made its way to Helping Hands, it was a pleasant surprise, and they just kill this performance. Hetfield's vocals on it are just a thing of beauty. And I always say on this podcast, he has a very underrated soulful voice. listen to this acoustic version and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, especially when he gets to the chorus. It's just superbly done. In fact, you can even hear some of the audience members say you can hear an audience member after the song say something along the lines of like, "That was awesome." Metallica fans want more Load Era tracks in the set list. Sorry, we do.
Yeah. They were certainly in fine form that night. What can I say?
Yeah, the second All Within My Hand show is solid, but that first one is just really, really excellent from start to finish.
Something was in the air.
Yeah, for sure. I am fascinated now to hear the number one favorite acoustic performance by Metallica in the words of Mr. Richard S. He.
It is none other than Dread and the Fugitive Mind from Megadeth Vivo Unplugged. No. Just had to give a shout out to Dave Mustaine palm muting on acoustic guitar.
It's
not what it's for, Dave.
You know what? Whenever I hear, you know, you chose Disposable Heroes, whenever I hear a song like that, I'm like,
yeah,
this is how you do metal acoustically. If you do like a thrash song on an acoustic guitar, it has to be like a little bit of like a novelty. Like, yeah. Metallica did Hardwired acoustically, pretty much note for note as they do it on the album for the most part. And yeah, I feel like that's just sort of, when you do it one time, it comes across to me as like, we're just having fun with this. Work. This might not work. We're just kind of letting loose and having at it. But when you try to do every song in that way, it just does not work. Rearrange.
Although they try.
Reimagine. Ooh, I'm singing acoustically. Dread and the Fugitive Mind. I'm trying to think of the melody of Dread and the Fugitive Mind right now.
Oh, I don't know either.
I know the song is, but
yeah,
off the top of my head. All I can think of is now, kill the king. The king is dead. Long live the king. I am the king. God save the king. You remember that song?
I remember Rainbow's Kill the King more.
So I always associate these two songs together because if I'm not mistaken, they came out together and then Dread and the Fugitive of Mine made its way onto a studio album after they came out together. Like, I think they were on a greatest hits album and then Dread and the Fugitive of Mine made its way on the next studio album, The World Needs a Hero. And poor Kill the King got left behind off the album. Whenever I hear one of those songs, I automatically think of the other one of those songs. And I just remember hearing Kill the King and being like, how many times can you say king? And of course, kill the king, save the king, long live the king, God save the king, I am the king. It's like Godsmack with Away. How many songs are you going to have with Away? Keep away, stay away, go away, far away, fall away. Okay, we get it, Salerna. We get it. Away.
I think you need to start a cameo doing Dave Mustaine impressions.
What does he charge now? Like $300?
Probably.
Because I remember it came out like he started charging more and more. He must have gotten a lot of requests.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, whatever he charges, I'll charge $1 less.
I respect that you value yourself.
You I'm one less dollar worthy than the real Dave Mustaine.
Yep. All right. On to my real number one. It is Mama Said, later with Jules Holland, 1996. I think this has only been performed twice, if I'm not mistaken. And the other version was at a Swedish show. But this one is literally just James solo, washed, you know, lit in blue on quite a nice TV soundstage. And to me, it's like the most vulnerable he's ever sounded at a live performance. He just doesn't, he's not projecting the rock stardom at all. And what I love about it is it just completely humanizes him. Like, he seems like a regular dude playing a regular acoustic guitar, like not even a super fancy sounding one in your living room. But yeah, to me, that really shows off like his talent and his humility, and also, yeah, the strength of the song. For him to be able to do a straight up country ballad that's so personal to him, I really respect it. So that is my number one.
This, I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's not in my top five, and literally up to the point where we started recording, I was like, I should put that version of Mama Said in my top five, because I, so going back to that bootleg album I had with the KSJO, I had that Mama Said from Jules Holland on that bootleg album. And I remember once YouTube was a thing, like finding the video on YouTube, and I've seen and heard that performance so many times, and it is everything you said it is. It is just so good. It's stripped down. It's very emotional. It's very rare you get to see and hear Hetfield in that way. And I was like, I should put it in my top five. But I did not. So I'm glad that you chose it, because that if I made this a top six, it definitely hands down would have weaseled its way in there. And if you ask me for my top five next week, it'll probably end up being on that list. Because I think this list is always forever changing, you know?
Yeah, I do just really have a soft spot for this particular song. People say, you know, everyone says we want a country and western album from James, but
yes,
I feel like even if he did it, I don't know if every song would sound like this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think it's a really fascinating side of him, right? Because he's, you know, this like Californian skater, thrasher, punk rock kid who, you know, finds country western later in life. And like his whole, there's so many things he borrows from the hat to some of the styles, of clothing. And then in Load Reload, you hear these influences seeping into the music, and there's no more obvious selection to show off than Mama Said. I mean, that is like when he goes into the chorus and you hear the, you know, the slide guitar. And I just always think, and I think I said this in the Little Bit Country episode I recorded, that sort of covered this. If I did not, I'll say it now. You know, if they sort of did country western before it was like a cool, trendy thing for rock artists to do, before you had Kid Rock doing it and Bon Jovi doing it and Steven Tyler doing it and all these crossover things, and they did it in a way that felt natural. It wasn't over, like when I hear Bon Jovi country, it sounds exactly like a Bon Jovi song, just maybe with like a pedal steel like in the background of the mix. But that's generally what like pop country is now, you know? Like pop country can be literally any style of music with like a pedal steel and like a slide guitar. So Metallica kind of did it in a way that felt natural, felt authentic, and still sounded like Metallica
somehow, which is the most impressive part.
Yeah. And I think of all the times like they've tried it, like the Unforgiven 2, I think is a great song and it has a little bit of that twang, but it shines, that country influence shines the brightest on this song. And actually just this past week, I was listening to Metallica on shuffle in the car. I picked up my daughter from daycare. We're driving home. Mama Said comes on and I turned it up and I'm singing along. My daughter is 21 months, so she's less than 2 years old. She is, you know, just starting to like vocalize and talk, and she has a lot of words now, but she's not, you know, she can't sing a full song because she's so young, but so like she's picking up on the words though, and then the song ends and she goes more. So I put it on again. The song ends and she goes, you know, it has that refrain, let my heart go. Mm. And she's going, let go, let go. And I was like, if a almost 2 year old has a reaction to that song, it is a damn good song.
I would say not always. Baby Shark, don't want
to
hear it.
I was going to say, I put that on to get out of playing Baby Shark because I've heard that song way too many times. Yeah. And you have no clue how many different versions of the song there are.
Oh, Lord.
Do, do, I don't want to know. Do, 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 Baby Shark. Do, 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 do. I was really... So basically, this is my life now. We listen to children's music. And then I once in a while put on music I like and hope that she has a positive reaction to it. Sometimes she goes, no, Dada, shark, or bus, meaning wheels on the bus, or or Baba for Baba Black Sheep. You know, all the classics. But once in a while, she hears a song, and then it ends, and she goes, more? And I'm like, we're going to play this song 5 million times if it gets me out of hearing more children's music.
Oh, yeah. Well, you sound like you're doing it right.
I'm trying. I'm trying, failing, succeeding, all at the same time. So my number one is maybe I'm cheating a little bit. Because it was more, let me just say, it's Dread in the Future to Mind from, no, maybe I'm cheating a little bit because it's not a Metallica song and it's not a full Metallica performance.
Mm.
It is James Hetfield performing solo, doing, something I never thought I needed until I heard it. And that's him covering Eddie Money, Baby Hold On. It is. So this took place, I believe, in February, 2020. Hetfield was recently out of rehab for the second time. This is his first performance on stage. I believe his first appearance was he was at the car museum for his car show, and then shortly after that, might have even been the same week, he surprised everybody, appeared on stage at an Eddie Money tribute show and sat down, just him and guitar, and did this cover. I had no clue him and Eddie Money were apparently friends. And he tells the story of how they met and how they became friends. And it's a very, you know, personal, heartfelt moment. And then he starts playing and I'm like, what is he playing? This is not a Metallica song. It's gotta be any money song. And, you know, I know all the hits, like, you know, from Any Money, mainly because my parents played Any Money when I was growing up. But like, if it's not one of his handful of hits, I'm not going to know what this song is. I'm like, what is it? And then he goes, and you can kind of hear the audience like trying to figure it out. And then he goes into Baby Hold On to Me. And everybody's like, oh my God. He takes this pop rock 80s song, completely strips it down, and similar to what they do with all within my hands, just makes it this eerie but beautiful song that takes on a whole new meaning. He sounds very vulnerable but strong in his vocal performance, and is just really, really well done. And if you've not heard it, you must seek it out on YouTube and listen to it. I talk about right now, like, I'm going to listen to it again as soon as we're done recording. It is that damn good, I think.
I just put it on now in the background, and yeah, it looks like a pretty magical moment.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that, you know, best of my knowledge, he was not advertised to be there. Mm. Like I said, he had just come from rehab. He comes back and just has this like personal moment for a friend and lets this out. And it's funny because I remember hearing this and being like, oh my God, like, is this, it's one of those things, times where I'm like, is this as good as I feel like it is? Or am I just have like my Metallica blinders on? Am I really excited to hear James Hetfield live again? Cause nobody knew his status, you know, going to rehab. And then, I remember talking to a friend about it, and he was like, he brought it up. I did not. And he's like, I had goosebumps. I'm like, all right, it was really that good. And then I went back to it, and I was like, wow, it is. And every once in a while, I still have to go back and like revisit it. And I just think I never in my life ever thought I needed to hear James Hetfield perform Any Money. And now all I want a James Hetfield country album, and I want a James Hetfield Any Money covers album.
Hell yeah. I don't know much about Any Money. He was a little bit Springsteen-esque, right?
A little bit in like tone, not so much like subject matter. Like I feel like subject matter, he was definitely more like just typical pop stuff, as far as I know, like love and kind of party, feel good, you know, kind of like general 80s pop stuff. Whereas Bruce Springsteen's no more associated with like blue collar heartland, a little bit more poetic, but kind of in a little bit in like energy, I guess, in that 80s like production was sort of similar to some of that era of Springsteen.
I've always seen James and Bruce as being like a little bit kindred spirits, I guess. Mm. Yeah,
I can see that. I was always curious,
like one day they would somewhere meet in the middle, or one would cut the other, or something like that.
I can see that. I've always actually, it's interesting you say that, because when I listen to Bruce Springsteen, which I feel like once a year I go through like a Bruce Springsteen phase for like a week, and I just like dive into a bunch of his stuff. It's especially like this time of year, like you're sitting outside, you're by a fire, you're having a beer, and you're like, what's American? Bruce Springsteen. You might not understand Australian. Now I'm taking jabs at Australia. Mike wore off on me. No, but sometimes it's just, or you're driving down the street and you got the windows hanging, like Springsteen works right now.
Totally.
And there's those moments, you know, where like Springsteen needs to be the soundtrack of my life in these little moments. It's perfect for it. But I'm not like an avid Bruce Springsteen fan, but whenever I listen to him, I've thought before, I'm like, I wonder if Hetfield likes him. Cause I feel like, I feel like he could be or should be like a big Springsteen fan in so many ways. And I agree with you. It's sort of, I feel like they would probably be a little bit on opposite ends politically, but in all other ways, they're like kindred spirits.
I think that I also think that a lot of Metallica fans look up to James the same way Bruce fans look up to him. You know, with that almost like, not quite religious awe, but there definitely is an awe and a mystique to they give voice to our emotions, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a rare thing.
Oh, so this is a very obscure reference, but if anybody out there ever saw the Ben Stiller show, so before Ben Stiller was famous, he had like a short-lived sketch comedy show, and I mention only because he does a brilliant impression of James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich in one episode, and Ben Stiller does a brilliant impression of Bruce Springsteen as well. And he does counting with Bruce Springsteen. You know, like Bruce always counts off his songs like one, two. So when Ben Stiller does it, he goes, And so now every time I hear Bruce Springsteen, I have to count it in like Ben Stiller as him. That's
he's
a little
wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong. It's spot right. on. Yeah. But for some reason, I just thought of that because of the two impressions.
Love it. Well, I feel like we picked two kind of similar performances for our number ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
They both have that atmosphere. Yeah.
We had a little bit. It's funny because we actually did not have much overlap, but we both chose a lot from the same type of songs for the same type of reasons from a lot of the same performances. We're good like that. What can we say? We're good like that. Now, the question is, when do we get Invincible Kid acoustic? We got Poor Twisted Me. When do we get Invincible Kid?
Drop A flat baritone guitar as well.
Invincible Kid, never see what he did. Got stuck where he hid, falling through the grid. See, just like slow it down a little bit. And...
yeah, I can see it.
And then Mustaine's just palm muting behind it, right? It's imagine if like they're like, all right, breaking news, Hetfield and Mustaine are collaborating together for the first time since 1983, and then all you got was like a Dread in the Future to Mine Invincible Kid acoustic recordings. And they're like, it would be like the equivalent of Guns N' Roses reuniting and then releasing Absurd as their first song.
I think if we paid like $3,000 to Dave Mustaine's cameo and then donated like $20,000 to All Within My Hands Foundation, we could maybe make that happen.
Now, oh, my wheels are turning now. I kind of want to find out how much money would it take for Mustaine to cover a Metallica song he did not write on his cameo.
Yeah.
If anybody out there is listening and you love me and you have a lot of disposable income.
Yeah.
Please find out.
He'll just do promises and he'll call it Nothing Else Matters, I think.
This I promise you, because nothing else matters. Walking on the bread line. I'm like, oh.
My favorite crooner, Dave Mustaine.
Well, guess what, Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it! Yeah! Lana!
Yeah. We did
never
it!
More your whipping boy! I'll never be your whipping boy ever again. Dang nabbit. I think we did it. And we did it under 90 minutes.
We got a bit more time if you want to extend it.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, hold on.
Right now, for those of you who cannot see, Mr. Richard S. He is taking out a instrument called the guitar, and he is about to perform The Sick, the Dying, and the Dead in its entirety, followed by an encore of Breadline, a Toot Lamone as performed by Elton John and Yo-Yo Ma.
Is that like actually audible?
Yeah, I can hear it. It sounds like do you just have it unplugged right now? Because that's what it sounds like.
I do.
Yeah.
Sadly.
It sounded like you were playing Keep on Rockin' in the Free World.
I am a chorus of the voices of the magnets spread before me. I don't know the rest of it. I will learn it though one day.
All what 11 song. Minutes of it?
Yeah. right?
Brilliant.
That's the whole song.
Brilliant. That is the whole song, just mixed up. Can you do, all right, Little Dog, go.
That whole song's just like... I need to have the lyrics ahead of me. I could probably like improvise the whole thing. This is what happens when you let me loose on Metallicast during a lockdown in Melbourne.
And ironically, the second guest in a row pulling out a guitar and playing random songs. I think Metallicast is the new MTV Unplugged.
Who can't get in? Moaning at the bedside. Moaning from each limb. Little dog who can't get in. Can only cry but cannot swim. A puny body and a tiny dick. A little dog can make you sick.
I believe we got 12 more minutes.
Pathetic little dog.
I think that made my day. In fact, I know that made my day. And by the way, it's morning there. This is how Richard starts his day, playing, talking to me and listening in a playing Little Dog.
it'll prepare me for, my work, which is writing about the disgraced producer, Dr. Luke. So, yeah. That's the fun of Lou. Like, every riff is quite memorable. Like, I haven't practiced them or anything, but I'm just like, you know.
Yeah. Stuck up in my head. Noggin. Well, I'm seeing flashes out my window.
Yeah.
Lightning's coming. Can you play us some Ride the Lightning? That sounds like the Saint Anger version of Ride the Lightning.
Just disgracing myself in Metallicast, playing actual Metallica songs. Yeah.
I'm going to just keep naming songs. Let's do this for two more hours. Let's go.
Yeah. One thing I'll say is I'm disappointed that Megadeth have never done anything from Rust in Peace acoustic, because it's like, if you're gonna do acoustic songs badly and palm muted, you should just commit to the bit, you know.
Have they never? They've never done it. I'm looking up. By the way, did you hear? Did you see that they are coming out with an acoustic album? Like, from
really?
A show back in the day. So this is from like a month ago. This is an article from Louder Sound. And this article is like, you know, the news story appeared on multiple websites. Let's see. Recorded on the World Needs a Hero acoustic tour at Bill's Bar in Boston, Massachusetts, on May 9th, 2001, the 10-track Unplugged in Boston album features the short-lived Megadeth lineup of Dave Mustaine, David Ellefson, guitarist Al Petrelli, and drummer Jimmy DeGrasso, and was previously only available to members of the Megadeth fan club. The album is now set to be released on August 20th, that's soon, on LA indie label Cleopatra Records, who are billing the stripped-back recording as a document of one of the most unique and sought-after concert experiences in Megadeth fandom. The track listing for Unplugged in Boston is Dread in the Future of Mind,
yep.
Trust, Time the Beginning, which is a good choice because that's just basically an acoustic song anyways, Use the Man.
Yep.
Here we go. Holy War is the Punishment Due.
Wow.
Followed by Almost Honest, your favorite song, Promises.
Hey.
She-Wolf, Moto Psycho, the best song title ever.
Moto Psycho acoustic is awful.
Moto Psycho.
Nothing about that song translates.
And right into Symphony of Destruction. Wow. Yeah. So that will be a must listen to. I'll probably need a few beers before I do so, but yeah. I will listen to it. And I think actually we should do a special episode
live stream,
either a live stream where we just do a running commentary, or we'll just do a track by track breakdown as a special Metallicast episode. It'll be like, you know, when a sitcom has like a very serious episode, they have a very special episode. We'll have a very serious, very special episode of Metallicast about, it'll be like an intervention of why you should not listen to this album.
Yeah. Zero and, jokes.
And fun story, Bill's Bar, believe it's no longer there, but it was a popular venue in Boston across the street from Fenway Park. And I played there as the lead singer in a Metallica tribute band.
Woo!
Called Alcoholica.
Woo!
There Hell you yeah. go. There you have it.
I like to imagine a younger Brandon being like in the radius of that bar in 2002. Just being like, why do I have a weird urge to enter this establishment, even though I'm not of age? It's just calling to me. Maybe this will come up in discussion in another 19 years.
Well, we definitely did it. Yeah, we did it! Louder!
What's the riff to that?
That sounds like... There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
I always just think of Swiss Beats like doing the bop. Like, got fast cars, fast broads. I'm driving 35 on the highway. I'm Ja Rule. Never more your whipping boy.
I'm excited for this to sound horrible, like on the podcast.
That's the whole podcast.
Maybe next time I'll like actually work at my guitar setup, and then.
Here's what I need you to do.
It'll get too self-indulgent, though, but yeah.
Here's what I need you to do.
Great. Yeah.
On August 20th, Cleopatra Records is releasing the first time commercially Megadeth Unplugged in Boston. I need you to learn all the acoustic versions of it, all 10 songs, and I need you for a live stream to perform it live. And I will do my Mustaine. If you play guitar, I'll do my Mustaine impression over it all.
Highly requested by everyone.
Yes.
Won't be in time because of the lag between us.
When I come back from paternity, we're going to make it happen. And it will not be in time because it will be incredibly lagged. Real-time performance is impossible over the internet. All right.
I think we've led them on long enough.
Yes. So please, Richard, tell everybody where they can find you on the interwebs.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RSH_ELLE. Hopefully I'll be publishing more articles and things soon. That's all I can say. And yeah, definitely a Blacklist article coming up next month.
And hopefully a Blacklist episode without me, though.
Mm.
Spoiler alert. So... will it be Richard by himself? Will he be accompanied by an exciting guest? Only time will tell.
I will certainly be playing the role of Brandon, though.
Yes. Do your best Brandon impression. Do Brandon as Dave Mustaine. Go.
I still don't have it. It's a particular... position in my throat, you know?
A huge thank you to Mr. Richard S.E. for coming back on Metallicast. It is always great fun when Richard comes on. We We always have a great in-depth conversation about whatever topic we're discussing, and mixed in with a bunch of nonsense, usually revolving around Megadeth, Lulu, and Saint Anger. Speaking of Saint Anger, as I've mentioned in this episode, Richard Essie is the biggest fan of that album that I know, and he wrote a whole 7,500-word essay in defense of that album for RedBull.com. Check out the link in the episode description if you've not yet read that article. I highly recommend it, no matter your opinion of the album. If you're a Metallica nerd, which I'm sure you are if you are listening to this podcast, check out the article. Make sure you check out the links in the episode description. There we go. Got the words out finally. To give him a follow on social media as well. If you're not yet following me on socials, check out and follow at MetallicastPod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you'd be so kind, if you're a new listener to the podcast, subscribe, download, leave a positive 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. All that goes a long way in helping this podcast continue to grow on my quest for world domination. And if you are a new listener, welcome to Metallicast Militia. One final shout out before we wrap up here. Hector Castro, the man behind my favorite one-man band, Bison, out of the UK. Check out the links in the episode description and give Bison your support. He has kindly provided all the music you hear in this episode, the original arrangements and music, including the epic Creeping Death intro that I love so much. I am hoping to be here next week. My wife is about to give birth sometime in the next few weeks. And if I'm not here, it's because she gave birth and we have a baby. If I am here, she's not yet gone into labor and given birth. Once she does give birth, I'm taking a little bit of a break, but I will be releasing new content, one or two new episodes a month, called Metallicast, My Friends of Misery, featuring guest hosts, some of which have been on the show, some of which have never been on the show. So I'm looking forward to releasing those episodes and providing new content for all of you until I make my triumphant epic return a few months down the road. So hopefully I will be here next week. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, middle up your ass. Yeah. Fans, not experts.